Welcome to the Redefining Recruitment Podcast, where we challenge the typical idea of what recruitment is all about and help cultivate a new type of HR thinker. The people we talk to are at the forefront of these thoughts and are delivering on the promise of new ways to engage future talent and leaders. Let's start with our hosts, the leaders and managers of one of the most innovative recruitment solution businesses in Central Europe, made up of GoodCall, DataCruits ATS, and the Recruitment Academy.
So welcome, everybody, to our latest edition of Redefining Recruitment Podcast. I'm here today with a very special guest, the CEO of Nano Energies, Standa Chwala. Standa has been around, I would say, numbers his whole career. At least that's how I saw it. University and MBA in the UK. And then he started in London at Morgan Stanley, Lloyds, and other companies, in various analyst roles. He came back to Prague. He took over different parts of trading and commodities and spent 5 years doing that. And then in March 2018, and for just 9 months, he was director of strategy and BD for Nano Energies before becoming CEO, where he's been there for the last 3 years. Standa and I met a couple of years ago at Happiness at Work CEO meetups, which focuses a lot on people and leadership. And I was always impressed with Standa's approach to those topics. So I'm very honored to have him here on our inaugural post-COVID, hopefully completely post-COVID, Redefining Recruitment Podcast. Welcome, Standa.
Thank you for the invite, Blake.
You're very welcome. Maybe just as a point of introduction, why don't you start off by telling us something about Nano Energies for those who don't actually know what it is. Is it small energy or is it something different?
The company itself is not the largest from the energy companies, but it's not related to the name itself. Nano has been around for 13 years. Nano is three companies. One is about the renewable energy primarily. The second one is about flexibility, steering remotely engines or machines, and the third one is about trading.
Okay, very good. Well, my first kind of real question is, how do you go from director of strategy and 9 months later CEO? I think all listeners would know, how do I become CEO in just nine months in a company? That's a pretty, I'm guessing it was planned ahead of time or not?
Yeah. It was planned after a few months I spent in the company. Yeah, it was the goal. Obviously, when you start somewhere, you are not going to get promised you are going to be a CEO. So that needs to be some time spent in the company so that everybody is certain that you can do the job. After it was planned after about a couple of months.
That's nice planning. You must have performed quite well in the first few months to kind of quite quickly get the move to CEO. What was scariest in your first couple weeks or first couple days as CEO? Did something change in your mindset?
There was no change between moving from one role to the other. Actually, nothing changed. I was doing exactly the same things.
Okay. Yeah.
I had some other responsibilities, but you know, 99% of things were the same. Like what I did before. Yeah,
that's good to hear. I would say then in that sense, most likely the owners and the more senior who decided on that, and you probably made the right move. I always think that's the best thing, whether it comes to jobs or even things like marriage. I think it's always best that when you know from one day to the next, things don't change that drastically if you're doing it the right way.
Yeah.
No offense to anybody who feels that there's a major change the day after they get married, but I would submit the opinion that that actually the best way is just smooth from one day to next and more longer term changes. Let's talk about the topic of what Nano Energies kind of stands for. And the way that I see it, and I saw it also doing some of my research, you know, there is this question of sustainability and renewable energy. Was that always a topic that you believed heavily in, or was it more something that you've kind of found when you came into Nano Energies?
I always believed in the sustainability, but I've never been the person who would approach the sustainability without thinking about it. You know, I think the right approach to sustainability is to make your own opinion, to take into the consideration numbers and the real effect on sustainability by from different things. So, you know, you currently you can see lots of sort of strong movement in a sustainability topic, and some of the things are just not thought through.
Yeah, or marketing. No.
Yeah. I mean, the cheapest marketing of current days is communicating sustainability.
Sure.
Without any numbers, without any goals, without anything.
Yeah. And how does Nano Energy stand on up for the numbers side? How is it different if you think about your sustainability and what you guys do also on the numbers side?
I think us or any other company should not have sustainability as the main product, right? Mm-hmm. You should provide products and services the best you can. Mm-hmm. The best quality without even considering sustainability.
Yep.
So that people buy it. Mm-hmm. And if you do sustainability right, but you know, you can see in the market lots of products and services that market themselves as the sustainable product, but the product itself doesn't have value. It's worse than the others.
Yes.
Or it's more expensive than the others. So if someone wants to help sustainability, they should just produce the best products and services. Mm-hmm. And that are sustainable, people will buy them. Mm-hmm. That you know, the impact on the environment will be the largest. So mm-hmm. the same it's with Nano Energies. Mm-hmm. I mentioned at the beginning we have three companies, and you wouldn't expect that trading has an effect on sustainability. You wouldn't expect that steering engines or machines remotely doesn't have effect on sustainability, but the opposite is true. It actually does. You know, when we trade, we by sort of decreasing the ups and downs in terms of volumes in the grid of electricity,
yeah.
We are helping grid not to use as many coal power plants, for example, uh-huh. and etc. So we don't market it. You know, we don't say, "Hey, trading is the most sustainable product in the world." Uh-huh. We do it because it makes sense in terms of money and other things, uh-huh. but it's also sustainable. And I think the right. same approach can be with any kind of product, whether uh-huh. you produce furniture or you provide any kind of service. Just uh-huh. do the best you can. Do it sustainably. And probably communicate it on the side that it's sustainable, but don't build the whole value of the product on claiming that it's the most sustainable in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think when the average person thinks about trading, they think about money,
like yeah.
quantitative trading, analytics style trading. They think of money, mm-hmm. and certainly not sustainability, the climate, the earth, etc. How do you reconcile those two things? I mean, you've just said that you feel and you say that trading actually helps the environment, which is an interesting idea. I certainly wouldn't think that. But if you have numbers on it and you claim that it doesn't cause these big ups and downs, it makes sense to me. But even internally or externally, when I look at purely renewable energy, which you also offer, and trading, I always think of those two things as very different from each other, if not even opposites, but you're doing it within the energy market, of course. How do you see those? They're not opposites to you?
No, they are very complementary. I mentioned that Nano are three companies, but essentially Nano is one. Mm-hmm. We just divide it into the different business lines. It could be easily one single company okay. with different teams.
Okay.
And that would be called Nano Green Digital Energy Services and Nano, mm-hmm. Nano Trading. Mm-hmm. But they are three, and all of them have effect on sustainability, but they complement each other. And you imagine, okay. you know, at the beginning, you need to produce electricity. So yeah. there is a renewable energy. You need to buy the renewable energy. You need to predict how much power it's produced based mm-hmm. on weather, mm-hmm. and you are never precise. Right. Then comes trading, that you trade the energy that renewable sources produce. You want to sell it in the market, you are never you are never precise, you know. During the real time, there is always more or less energy, and then machines that are somewhere else than in nano helps to decrease the imbalance in terms of how much electricity you predicted and what is the real production. Yeah. So you steer the assets, for example, buildings, freezers, or whatever, you know. Yeah. I say machines, but it can be anything.
Sure.
Anything,
sure.
You know, whatever,
anything that uses energy.
Exactly. And you remotely steer it so that you decrease the difference between the predictions and the real production of power. So each of the three companies is somehow related to the other. It's chain.
Yeah. So you're telling me when I leave for my holidays tomorrow, I don't need to unplug all of my devices. You'll tell them to turn off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Stenda, a big part of Nano Energies, as if we've been talking about, is trading. And I saw that you guys took on a pretty big investment recently. To one of the areas is to start trading in Germany and or Austria. How do you trade during COVID with everyone at home? Can your traders continue to do that, or would they need to come into the office for that?
Most of us were at home. Yep. In Nano, it's about 70 of us, and 60 of us usually spend working time at home. Mm-hmm. And we set traders that they have an option. They can be in or can be out. Some of them were working from our trading floor. Okay. Some of them were trading at home. So okay. You are, it's 3 a.m., you are sitting at home, you have a few screens in front of you, yeah. Probably in your living room, and you're trading a big chunk of money. Yeah. It worked. I don't think the your living room is the best trading environment.
Yeah. Yeah,
because when you are on the trading floor, you have more screens, and it's just, you know, the feeling when you sit there, it's like steering the spaceship, right?
Sure.
If you are sitting in your living room on your couch, you know, you can never have that feeling.
Sure. Kids crawling all over yeah. you, dog jumping on you, hits the wrong button and you sell a million instead of buy a million, no?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, but it can be the best best deal of the day.
but this brings me to then a different topic. So clearly you must trust your employees if you allowed them to do things like trade from, well, obviously not their own computers, but trade from home and do all of those things that they needed to from home, or be in the office completely on their own. Talk to me about the topic of trust and how that played out in COVID.
Yeah, I think a topic of trust during COVID was very much, it started to get exposed in many companies.
Yeah.
And many companies realized that they can trust. We switched from office to the home office from one day to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Even we started before the lockdown.
Okay.
I started to prepare myself for the decision about 2 weeks before that by setting up VPNs for everybody, mm-hmm. etc. I didn't tell anybody that I will make the decision in a couple of weeks. And when everything was ready, from one day to the other, we left, and wow. It worked
wow.
perfectly. I did not expect that it work. It would work so well in terms of the systems, communications, and so etc. Hmm. And you can read interviews with some managers that they say home offices, it's nonsense. Come back. Let's be sure. back in the offices.
Yeah.
And I think. I think it's showing that there is a different kind of issue than the home office itself in those companies, because if you don't trust your employees, there is certainly the issue, but issue is not the home office itself. It's something else.
Absolutely.
It's about culture. It's about, it's probably, you know, it's not the environment where employees work is probably not the fastest, that, you know, people have lots of freedom anyway. Mm-hmm. Managers should start somewhere else than blaming the home office. But obviously it's easier than changing the culture. It's easier to tell them come back.
Of course. And your setup for the future, what is it now, and what do you imagine it'll be for the rest of this year? Is it still completely open and everyone can work from home, or are you encouraging them to come into the office for a couple days a week?
We told our employees that they can come back now. Mm-hmm. Anybody,
they can. They don't have to.
Yeah. We did a survey and we asked them. Who wants to come back, mm-hmm. and who wants to stay at home, mm-hmm. and, you know, how much time we want to spend in the office, how much time we want to spend at home. And what 90% people responded to that questionnaire, and 10% of a total headcount said, I don't want to come back to the office. And the rest said, 90%, I want to come back to the office. Yeah. And the average is 3+2, yes. 3 at work, yeah. 2 at home.
Yeah. This is a great topic that I think you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, and that's the topic of just asking. And it's amazing sometimes what you can find. I've talked to a couple other senior managers and CEOs, a couple who have said, I don't need to ask, I know the answer. And I've always said, but do you really know the answer? Because I think you'd be surprised to hear from a lot of employees that, okay, they may not want to be in the office 4 or 5 days a week, but one or two, yes. And I think when you actually ask them the question, you read the answers and you say, hey, you know, at least 50% of the workforce that we have, whether it's 70 or 700, would actually like to be in the office at least a few days a week. Let's use that, you know, and let's use that to show also to the employees, hey, we're not forcing anyone to do anything, but actually you want this. And yes, and I don't think every company is 90% that they want to come back to the office. But I think most companies are at least 50, 60% where they want to come back for at least 1 or 2 days, sometimes 3. So the fact that you asked, firstly, I'd say, like, tip my hat, well done to actually ask. And then well done to do what the employees want. Because as I was saying to a friend of mine the other day, the companies that are too rigid right now are going to lose people. And there's enough opportunities on the market, I can tell you from being in recruitment, that you'll lose employees. And there's companies out there like yours that will say, you want to be 2 days a week home office? No problem. Occasionally 3 days? That's fine. You know, if we have a level of trust, no issue. We've done the same thing with GoodCall and our other businesses recently where we said, you know, a couple days a week from home office, fine, within reason. If there's times when you need a couple more and times when you prefer 4 in the office, that's okay. But there's the level of trust. Starting with the communication, actually asking, what do you want? I think unfortunately there's not enough companies that are doing that proper communication. They did during COVID when they realized communication is key, but now many of them are just kind of blind and saying, no, now office time.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to work.
Yeah, well, it might work for some, but they will have to overpay people, right? They will have to pay much more than
they will. But then I think even the loyalty, they're buying the loyalty.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. And the moment somebody comes along with a similar salary and better everything else, they'll jump ship again. I don't think it's a long term strategy. Speaking of that and loyalty, you know, there's sometimes mixed feelings about energy companies in general, especially big ones, or let's say the larger global ones. Obviously, you guys are a bit smaller. It looks like you're getting bigger. Maybe you'll have to change the name of the company. NanoEnergies does seem to have a very good name on the market. Do you have an EVP, an employee value proposition? Do you have kind of something in your head or that your HR says to the market, to employees, why you should come and work in NanoEnergies?
We don't have it written on the wall. Mm-hmm. It's somehow embedded in the company since the very first moment of the company by founder. Mm-hmm. And I think we managed quite well to keep it that way, even though we've been growing quite rapidly in a relative sense. Mm-hmm. Everybody who is working in the company somehow knows what the values are. You know, in terms of in terms of values in our retail. It's very clear that you know, we don't want to put profit over the customer. So there might be energy companies that you know, create three-page conditions with the small letters. Why we would do that, right? Even our employees use our electricity, so why we would want to give our employees three-page conditions that no one understands, right? And another thing. So yeah, we just want to we think that the business should be done in a moral way, and it brings value because when you try to hire people, good people. They obviously have a number of other offers. And when they come to us, one of the reasons we ask, one of the reasons why they come to us is that there is the they see there is the purpose what we do, and they see that, you know, the company itself is not just run for money, so the shareholders can take it home and go for holidays. That there is something bigger, and so this is a long term value in the company.
But there, I want to ask you a question, Standa. How do you, when you're interviewing people, or when you're doing some of the final interviews, or first, how do you actually find out that they believe in that? I'm sure you say, you know, do you believe in sustainability, and they say yes. But how do you actually determine these people really are our style of person, our culture, that they believe in what we believe, to go with the Simon Sinek ideas?
To be honest, we don't really dive deep into their heads whether they believe in sustainability or not. We touch upon that topic. But we think that if someone is close to the whole sustainability topic, they will want to work for us, because if they did not, they would think I would have awful time working there if I believe that coal power plants are the best in the world. So you know, we have employees in the company that are they are very vocal about these things, that they strongly believe in sustainability. And there might be the others who don't talk too much about that topic. They more think about that topic. We have 70 people in the company, and most of them are somehow analytical, you know, traders, analysts, developers. So we don't have, you know, a company full of marketing people that would be talking about sustainability, you know, in our kitchen. So we have lots of people that think about things rather than talking about things. I think that's what sustainability needs, thinking about it rather than just talking about it.
Just having discussions and stuff, but actually thinking and doing. Okay, it's an interesting point to make, that you know, just believing in sustainability is not enough. You actually need to be able to do the job and everything else, as well as believing in what the company does and thinks. What was it like hiring during COVID? Just on this topic, you hired remotely, I take it, without meeting the people face to face. Was that scary? Were you worried about that? That you wouldn't somehow be able to really get to know the people?
We started hiring during the COVID, actually, when COVID started last year. We were keep hiring. It wasn't like we had a break for a month, like, you know, during I think it was a March, April, the economy stopped a little bit. Everybody was scared. We were not. We were thinking, right, that's the right moment. So we were hiring anyway. And I wasn't scary, but I was, I didn't know what I should expect. But in any case, it worked fine. Where you are not able to meet someone face to face, you cannot see the body language as well. You know, when you talk someone over Zoom or Teams. So there is some kind of deficiency in that. But when I look back on the people that we hired, I don't think we did anything wrong, you know, that we would hire worse people than before.
I mean, that's the ultimate question, right? You know, if remote hiring and therefore COVID caused companies either to not be able to hire as well, many companies had to stop, some companies stopped hiring because they felt they needed that face-to-face. Some companies told me, we won't hire somebody without seeing them face-to-face at some point, before we sign a contract with them or before we give them an offer, we have to see them face to face. Another company said, we can do this. You know, we can have maybe an extra person involved in the process just as a double check or a triple check. And I heard about wonderful stories of super people being hired. I think your position that, you know, it didn't change, you know, kind of like getting married or becoming CEO.
Yeah.
It just kept going. Yeah. And, you know, you sounds like you just switched it from offline to online and everything continued as normal. Would you agree?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. We hired about 20% of current headcount during the during the COVID.
Really?
We gave option to come to the office if they want to, because I think it's, you know, everybody should get opportunity to see the environment, to see the few people that we had there.
Yeah.
And some of them took that opportunity, some of them didn't. But in any case, it worked. And it, interesting is that we have a people in the company that they have not seen their boss for ever.
Unbelievable.
I mean, they are meeting their boss now after 6 months, for example. You know, that, and it worked the whole time. So,
And these were even... let's say more or less experienced people, not just kind of senior experienced people, but also more junior?
During the COVID, we hired people for the junior and senior positions.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we hired for some of the very senior positions as well as entry-level positions. So it was a mix.
An entry-level person, when they don't have some face-to-face kind of almost via osmosis, you know, sitting next to somebody, just listening to them, getting that those small little involuntary coachings and mentoring sessions. Did you not see that some of the junior people maybe won't develop as fast if they're not sitting next to somebody for at least a couple hours a day, a couple hours a week? Have you noticed that or not?
We wanted to spend as much time communicating to those people as we could. And you know, you asked me whether the recruitment process was somehow not as good as before the COVID. My response was that it wasn't, but I think if you ask the same question to people that were hired, I think some of them would respond that for them it would be easier.
Yeah.
If office is open, because they, you know, they can meet people.
Definitely.
Now that, you know, when you join team, you meet your team.
Yes.
And
yes.
The rest of the company you see during the whole company teleconference.
Absolutely.
But you cannot meet them, you know, when they are making coffee and make a small chat with them.
But this is the topic that I've been bringing up and seeing quite often, and that's the whole concept of how teams, not Microsoft Teams here, but how teams were the ultimate driver of business over the last 15, 18 months. Not whole departments and functions, not entire companies, but teams. And quite often cross-cultural, cross-function teams that had to get things done. And just as you're saying, you know, who do you speak to 38 out of your 40 hours, or sorry, 58 out of your 60 hours that you're working each week during COVID? Your team. Yeah, and almost nobody else. So if you want to actually drive your company forward, you need to look at these teams or micro teams and see what you can do for them. And one of the topics that I've been pushing is the idea of super teams, where you kind of supercharge them with technology. You know, what can these small teams use to communicate better and more and talk to other teams and get more things done? So you saw that, I guess, firsthand.
I cannot agree more. I think we wouldn't work as efficiently during the COVID if the company wasn't driven by teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think the main reason why it worked was that we hired good management that had good teams and they drive the day-to-day business. It's not, you know, it's foolish to think that, you know, when you are CEO sitting at home, you will be you are able to drive everything what is happening in the company. And to be honest, I think it's the same even when you are not at home and you are in the office. It's the same thing. The company is better run if it's run by teams. You regularly see in the interviews that there is, you know, CEO interviews with CEOs, founders, you know, the superstars. You somehow think that these alpha people drive everything in the company, but it's not the case, you know. It's good to do these interviews, podcasts and other things because it's, you know, good for the company, it's good marketing, but it's not true picture of who is producing the value in the company. It's much more spread than it would seem to be obvious from outside world.
It's a very good point. I just got off a weekly meeting where I had to remind myself, but also the team, that much of what I do and we do would never come to fruition, would actually not happen unless actually the people were out there doing what they do best, you know, doing their jobs. It's like any other team, right? On a football team, I watched England Germany last night. You know, if everybody isn't doing their roles, then nothing gets done. You know, we had the case a couple of years ago of Croatia putting together a great team that got it done. No superstars, but got it done. And I think in the small team environment of companies, large and small, it's the same thing. Good. Couple final questions as we start to move towards our end. Do you guys have any cool benefits related to energy? You mentioned that you ask your people, or your people should be using your renewable energy. Do you give it to them for free? Do they have to pay for it? What if they don't use it and they use one of the big competitors? What's your view on that?
We are not great believers in benefits.
Okay.
To be honest, we think that there are some very very basic questions that very basic topics we need to get right.
Yeah.
And if you provide lots of different benefits, you are just compensating for something not working.
Yep.
So you know, we pay people well. Mm-hmm. We let them work we give them flexibility.
Yes.
You know, we talk about it. Mm-hmm. We think that they should work on the topic that they enjoy. They should mm-hmm. they should develop themselves, and they should see the purpose in the company, and they should work in the fairly nice environment, and that's something we managed quite well in terms of offices.
Yeah.
In terms of benefits, we don't have any food tickets and all these things.
We're the same, by the way.
We don't even call it benefit, but we have a shared electric car, so anybody can for personal reasons can borrow the car.
Mm-hmm.
We have great coffee, and
I read about
and we have a sports card, you know, multi-sport.
Yeah.
That's something it's been years in the company, mm-hmm. and to be honest, I think that the people who do sports are really good employees.
In general, I would agree with you, but we always have to be careful because we also train on unconscious bias and the halo effect, right? We have this story of the guy who just always felt that tennis players and their competitive nature are great employees, and he hired a guy years ago who was a tennis player who was a superstar, and from that moment on, every time he saw a tennis player, he hired them.
Yeah.
And of course, he got burned 27 times and he succeeded 3. But he had this idea that tennis players are great. But in general, I would still agree with you that people who do sports tend to have other qualities that make them good, but still need to be careful. To be honest, Ando, we're very similar. I would say we also don't believe in having a big long list of somewhat, I don't want to say worthless, but they seem to be relatively small compared to the bigger stuff, which is a great job. You know, super environment, believing in what you do, a good salary, decent bonuses, and then things like, you know, lunch vouchers, and it's kind of like, why? You know, there's so much better stuff that we could be doing, creating great events for everyone to have a super time at it, experiences rather than, you know, 85 crowns at a local hospoda during Monday and Wednesday when they're in the office, you know.
Mm.
Diversity, is it a topic for Nano Energies? Is it something that you're trying to focus on? Because I can imagine you'll be quite a lot of male versus female. What does that mean to you guys? diversity.
Yeah, you are right that the energy sector in general is very concentrated.
Energy with tech or energy with finance.
And
even worse or even more extreme.
I think the proportion of women in nano is higher than it usually is in energy companies.
Okay.
I'm happy about it. It's not half and half. It's certainly not, but the proportion is decent. We don't concentrate on hiring the women in the company. It's just if we have women in the company, it's because they are the best.
Yeah.
Not because they are women, and so we don't concentrate on the topic of diversity. It's somehow in the values. Mm-hmm. We don't want to make shortcuts that if someone is the developer and is male, the other one must be male. Mm-hmm. The next one could be a great woman. We are just open minded in this.
Good. Okay. You mentioned the beginning, but I just want to come back to it, and then I'll ask you my final question. But first, you said Nano Energies is three companies, but that actually it could be one company. Tell me more about how to create three or one spirit, kind of one team spirit, when actually if I think about what the people do from trading to the other parts of renewable energy, they seem like very different people with different mindset, certainly different skill sets. How do you create one company culture and one spirit from such diverse, here the topic of diversity, from such diverse people?
Our objection is not to create one universal culture in the company. There is obviously some sort of baseline culture, the same values, approach to sustainability and other things. But then I wouldn't say in three companies, but in each of the teams can be a different culture. If you look at our trading team, typically male, around 30, played poker most of their life. Their culture in this team will be different than in marketing or in finance. And we don't force them to have some universal culture. It cannot work, if you want to keep people, you need to let them create their sort of local culture.
Within reason, no? With some borders, right?
That what defines the sort of underlying culture of the whole company that's been around from the start. So it fits within the limits, mm-hmm. but we don't force them to every detail of that culture.
Makes sense. Sandor, my last question that we ask every guest that we have on the podcast, what do you do in recruitment that you think is somehow unique or special to Nano?
I don't think I have something unique. I'm sorry. I know what we do is we hire people from different from sort of different sources, I would say. We give benefit to our employees if they find someone. We tell them to go to meetups. We happily provide them with budget for the development. Increased budget for the development if they bring if they go to the meetups. Yeah. I see every single one who is coming to the company. We test. We let them to come to the office and to see whoever they want. Founder, everybody who is coming to the company after they joined.
Wow.
I don't think there is anything unique. If there was, I wouldn't tell you.
There's the real truth, ladies and gentlemen.
But we are just, in terms of recruiting people, we try to recruit the best, and mm-hmm. typically the people who are in short supply in the market. And we believe that, you know, we need to give them the basics. I told you a few moments ago, that's why they come. I think they need to understand very well the purpose of the company. Mm-hmm. And interesting is that historically, when I did interviews, I usually interviewed people, and I found out that lately it's been other way around.
They're interviewing you.
Yeah. When I have a final interview with employees, and I know that, you know, they have more offers. Most of the time is spent by me telling them why they should come to Nano. You know, before that it was like 90% I was asking and the person they were asking the questions, and now it's other way around. So I'm being interviewed.
Sando, thank you for that. Whether you know it or not, you just described some very unique things that not all companies do. There's still CEOs out there that think that they're in a buying market, and they're not, and they haven't been for a while. You're in a selling market. And if many companies, many CEOs haven't realized that. And they think, firstly, they don't see all the candidates. And when they do, it's more, you know, starting off with, so why do you want to work for me? Why do you want to work for us? You know, why do you think we're the greatest company on earth? So the fact that you've recognized you're a good company, they should want to work with you, but you're not going to go into every interview like that because you'll lose candidates that can come later on. I think you do have some unique things that, that you're doing. Congratulations on it. That brings us to the end. Thank you very much for being a super guest. I really enjoyed the talk, and I hope it was interesting for everyone.
Thank you very much, Blake. It was a pleasure.
The Redefining Recruitment Podcast was brought to you by the people who believe in waking up the recruitment industry and are living that life each day at DataCrude ATS, Recruitment Academy, and the recruitment and talent sourcing powerhouse, Good Call.